This week on RSBNB Update, Mojang joins us to discuss RuneScape's endgame. PVM, quests, and skills to 120 and beyond show us the obvious, but RuneScape's unique design paints a different picture. Join us as we embark on a journey to uncover RuneScape's true endgame. This is RSBNB Update, episode 916, recorded Saturday, December 17th, 2022. RuneScape Endgame is everything. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, as we move through the holiday season, head into the new year, we've got another special episode of RSBNB Update lined up for you. And to help deliver this episode this week, Sirion is here. Welcome aboard.
Hey, hey, hey.
Also joining us here this week is Maud Jack, RuneScape's lead designer.
Hi there.
This week, we're going to be sitting down with Maud Jack, and we're going to be having a discussion about what Endgame looks like in RuneScape. We're going to dive into that in just a moment, but of course, if you're joining us for the first time, you can find full show notes at update.show. Follow along in there. We're also in our friends chat, Bits Bytes in-game. And of course, we have our Discord at rsbnb.com/discord. So without further ado, let's just dive in and talk about RuneScape's Endgame.
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic. I hadn't been thinking about this because I've been doing all these streams and design stuff internally and externally, and I've largely been thinking about the mid game. So it's quite interesting to think about the end game in that regard. But then, as you say, like defining RuneScape's end game, especially to comparable games, is quite interesting. So because I think when people talk about end game, it's not a particularly well-defined term, as you said, like in a lot of games. You level up and then you start the end game, but it's not really clear what that means. And so in the Warcraft, for example, there's a very short mid game where you race to the level cap as quickly as possible, and then you just do dungeons for 2 years. And that's sort of the end game sort of is the game in that, and there's a sort of short journey to the end game. Whereas RuneScape has almost the opposite structure, like a huge mid game and then a relatively small end game, if that makes sense by comparison. And so thinking about how... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's always like, I think that is one of the things that drew me to RuneScape in the first place, right? It's much more about, it's more about the journey than the goal, I guess, in that sense.
Yeah, I think so. Because it's interesting that you formatted the question in that way, Shane, in terms of... Like, what do you do when you're maxed?
Right, exactly. And the reason I think this is such an interesting topic and why we need to expand on this in such a wider way is that we have this experiment running, and it's been running since late September, called Fresh Start Worlds, where we have these huge XP modifiers. And we had a discussion internally about whether or not people were going to max in this thing and how easy it would be to max in this thing. And lo and behold, people have maxed in this thing. People have got multiple 99s, 120s, 200 mils. And that really brings forward the question, what do you do after that? What do you do after that max? Well, some people might say comp. Some people might say trim. Some people might say master quest. Some people might say 5.6, soon to be 5.8. But in reality, it could be something else because it, like you said, it doesn't really feel that very well defined. And I know in our conversations, we've talked about how you poke your head into multiple other MMOs. If we take this one step back further and look at other video games in general, what do you see as endgame if we're just talking about general video game sense?
I think that the real distinction, because like people debate about, you know, some people would say, you know, the RuneScape endgame starts at max. Some people would say it starts at like 90 or 92 or something like that. You know, you could draw an fairly arbitrary line any way you like. I think the key distinction from a design point of view is something like the distinction between like tailored content versus repeatable content, or maybe short-term content versus long-term content, something like that. So the interesting thing about RuneScape is that if you look at the skills, there's no hard end game point, but what you see is a gradual tailing off of the rate at which you get rewards. So, you know, at very low levels, you level up skills extremely quickly.
Yep.
And then the mid levels, it starts to take more time. And then towards the end of, you know, past 92, the skill starts to really slow down. And you're putting really concerted effort in. And so in that sense, that kind of models the structure of the sort of thing we're talking about. There's no formal line where mid-game ends and end-game begins.
Right.
But it is still, it has that same sort of structure. In that sense, skills sort of implicitly have their own early game, mid-game, and end-game to them, just in the way that they're structured. Because ultimately, like end game is sort of an arbitrary concept, but what our players really asking when they're asking, like, what's the end game is, well, what else have you got for me to do, basically, right? Like, I've done that, what else you got? And by nature, like, the people who are asking that question are the people with the most time to invest. So what they're looking for is something that's really long term.
Right.
So you've got that sort of, like, and then, so that's why I just draw the distinction between tailored content and repeatable content, that tailored content is, for the most part, the best content, but also the most outrageously inefficient content to build from that player's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to sink 1,000 hours into something, if that's what you're asking for as a player, I don't mean it's, we get kind of tangled up in this with time gating and you know, like, I think it's a very tangled thing, because we've got, like, half the players want to minimize the amount of time they spend playing the game, yeah, and the other half of the players want to maximize the amount of time they spend playing the game.
This is a super interesting insight. Right. This is one of these things that I knew intuitively, but now that you mention it, I'm like, oh, that's just putting all of these
thoughts
into one sentence.
And I got the perfect example of this. I'm sitting currently at 199.3 million farming XP. I want to maximize the amount of time it takes to get 200 mil, because I don't want those XP drops to stop as soon as I
farming. Right?
I don't want to stop as soon as I hit 200.
Because you've got, like, half the people are focused on the goal, and they want to achieve the goal as quickly as possible.
Yep.
And then I'm saying half. I've got no idea what the proportions are. but then the other group of people are sort of like, They see the game in terms of value for money or something like that. You know, I'm paying my subscription fee. I want as much RuneScape as possible for that money. And so for them, like, content, the time taken is kind of the point, I would say.
Right.
And so when we're talking about so that former group are quite challenging to design for, I would say. The latter group, who want content for them in order to sort of fill time, and so what we're talking about in terms of end game, I think, is that kind of content of, like, they want something which is a satisfying long-term investment. So that can't be, like, if you think about a quest in RuneScape is the obvious tailored content.
Mm-hmm.
Like, huge investment from our point of view takes the player an hour or less to complete. I'm not saying we shouldn't make quests, that's not my point at all, but we can't build an end game out of quests. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Because you'd be done with it. Sorry, go ahead.
I always, like, whenever I see, like, I love quests, like, duh, I guess, but I, like quests are, like, a lot of fun, and I think they make the game what they are, but sometimes I'm like, from a business point of view, do quests actually make sense? So how is sort of the thinking on that front? Like, do you try and balance between these sort of tailored content and repeatable contents, or do you try to put more repeatable elements into the tailored content or something like that?
I mean, yeah, it's been a battle over the years, I think, because, like, what you're saying is exactly right. Like, from a business point of view, well, sorry, hang on, let me refine that statement a little bit. From a strict quantified short-term business point of view, quests make no sense.
Yes,
that isn't the same thing as quests don't make sense, because
for me,
the way I think about it is that the grindy long-term content is important, but it needs to have context. There needs to be a point. There's a reason you're doing it. There's something you're working towards or something you're invested in. And so quests, and again, like, you can take an entirely different, you can take a creative lens on this and say, like, well, quests are important because, you know, they inspire the imagination and you know, they tell stories which make people happy. Set that, like, that's the creative lens. Set that aside completely and go for the pure business point of view. The cynical business take on it is, like, well, it's good to have people invested. It's good to create excitement and have things to look forward to. And, you know, I think you can make the case both creatively and business wise. But yes, in terms of, like, you know, the person who says, look, I paid my grandfathered membership rate and I expect 1,000 hours of content,
right?
A quest is not giving them that, you know. Like, so in that, for that player in that context, quests are not efficient.
Yeah, we also need to say that
kind of have to do both, right?
That quests in RuneScape are different than in any other game, and that they're the story vehicle, whereas in, you know, your typical World of Warcraft, etc., most quests are just fetch quests and such. So that in many ways gives RuneScape the reason to keep doing quests, and is what the game was built on, I guess, in a sense, at the very beginning from the story bedrock. But from one thing I just want to clarify on this is that you as a designer and person view endgame as effectively what you do with your gameplay time once you, in effect, reach, let's just say, a significant chunk of the game played and complete.
Would it perhaps make sense to say that the end game starts when your progression is no longer aimed at reaching tailored content, but more like you're now doing the content just for the sake of, I mean, doing content. There might still be milestones and numbers you're increasing, but like the tailored content is sort of run out, right? Like at some point, you have all the skill requirements to do all the quests, for example.
I wouldn't put it quite as cynically as like doing it for the sake of it, but yeah, very much. I want to play more of this game. So I haven't played the latest God of War, but the previous God of War was a single player game with a campaign, right? And you get to the end of it, and then at the end, there's just a repeatable combat challenge that you can keep doing for random loot drops. And that means that if you're enjoying the game, you can keep playing it. So in a sense, that single-player game had an end game where you could just do it more. Something like what Batman had similar. So like a lot of games would have like a combat challenge, you know, combat challenge mode at the end or something. You know, Devil May Cry has that sort of thing, doesn't it? Like you go in and get the best score you can in specific little dimension challenges, which again is kind of indefinitely repeatable end game, you know.
Okay. Okay.
Because if you want it, you know, you can't tailored content just cannot just continue indefinitely. So if you want to keep playing the game when you've run out of tailored content, obviously
I've heard about some AI developments recently that maybe
we'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Some combination of ChatGPT and RuneScape lore and RuneScape. Dynamically driven quests. Oh boy.
You could just log in one day and be like, can you please give me a new quest? And it's like,
right, okay. Some Margaret dialogue. Well, so we had an example of that. Oh, sorry. It's not AI, but I mean, you're familiar with Star Trek Online's player created content, right, Shane?
Yes. Yeah.
They had a set of tools where players could make their
Foundry,
own quests.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. And my observation is no one played them.
Yep.
Like, I'm assuming that's why they removed it in the end. No one played it.
Yep.
It was basically an engine for people to make their own Star Trek fanfic quests, the sort of thing that a small number of RuneScape players would absolutely love, right? Like, imagine being able to make your own quests, set up the NPCs, write the dialogue, and, you know. And in practice, no one played it. And it's sort of fascinating to see I'm saying no one. I'm sure the proportion was extremely small, but they ended up pulling the feature.
They were very dedicated.
And I don't know quite what to make of that, but it suggests that it's not just absence of tailored content. It's also like there's a difference between like doing an official quest and doing an unofficial quest.
And
like there's a difference between reading, watching a new Star Wars film and watching a new Star Wars fan film. They hit differently for some reason.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I in the past did take a cruise to the Foundry, the user generated content hub for Star Trek Online, and most of them were, you know, less than optimal in terms of quality and whatnot, and I imagine that played a role in it too. But there were definitely the gems out there for that. So
my suspicion is that AI generated quests wouldn't actually solve, even if they were extremely high quality, which they could be eventually. My suspicion is that they wouldn't fix that problem,
right? Because they're not official and they're not,
they'd kind of become their own grind in a way, right?
Because
that's procedural, right? Like a procedural general, like Diablo, the way Diablo 3 works, right? Procedural generated dungeons are not uncommon in this genre, and you can produce an indefinite number of procedural dungeons. And that feels like Shattered Worlds feels kind of like endgame content,
yes,
right?
Yeah,
it has that procedural generation indefinite. You can just keep running it forever.
Combat Showcase variant of that, and that actually leads to an interesting perspective on this, because you know people get 99s, 120s, 200 mils, and such, and then they look at the achievement list and so on and so forth. They gathered their lore books, and that led to in players that have been part of our communities setting up their own challenges, whether they be PVM or otherwise. And this was all happening before the means existed to actually recognize this in game. So in some ways that was the players curating their own content without having the official underpinnings for that. And that led us to something that was an interesting idea, and where I think we can go next with this is, to what extent were the updates that we've had that recognize achievements, that recognize those paths towards endgame, unplanned versus being purposely fleshed out at the later stage of the game? And we're talking about things like comp, trim, master quest, master max now, those sorts of things.
You could go all the way back to the original skill capes as well, couldn't you?
The same
question.
Yeah.
So I wasn't involved in the development of most of those things, but as far as I'm aware, they were largely added from the point of view of retroactively recognizing existing player achievements. Okay. I mean, that's true as recent as the current Master Max cape. That's essentially like, as the number of people that are already eligible for that cape rises, it makes it clear how much more attainable that goal is, and therefore makes it sane as a goal, you know. I guess that it's an interesting distinction you draw that, like, I think RuneScape is unusual in that regard of having a very self-directed player base. That's unusual within the genre as well, that a lot of games have, you know, they set your objectives for you. They give you goals to aim for or achievements, something like that. And it's unusual to see players do more than that. Often the goal is extremely, you know, you think about a trim comp as a sort of objective. That's a pretty extreme objective. Yeah. So often the objective is pretty extreme, but largely I'm not aware anywhere else within the MMO space of players doing, you know, the equivalent of 200 million all.
And that was my question.
Isn't really a concept that exists in other MMOs, as far as I know.
Yeah,
you might have like content creators or like a very niche group of people doing it, but like, yeah, no, it's like, it's pretty,
those are your
equivalent
of settled, right? But for the most part, there's not much that's because Guild Wars 1 has this God Walking Among the Immortals, which I think is just trim comp essentially. It's just do everything once, like tick off absolutely everything. And as far as I know, there isn't really a step beyond that, if that makes sense. Whereas we have our true trim and our my point is, yes, I think the RuneScape community has always been, as you pointed out, like very, very create goals, share those goals socially. You know, it create aspirational things for other players.
Yeah, and I then call that enterprising.
Our history is our history has essentially just been retroactively recognizing. There are some, say with Iron Man, where we can't really retroactively recognize because the technical setup doesn't make sense to retroactively recognize that. So, but we were still retroactively creating a mode that players had already been doing themselves and just kind of formalizing it.
And in many ways, this leads to the entire RuneScape endgame perspective is that World of Warcraft, ESO, Star Trek Online, every other MMO is designed to funnel people towards that endgame. Whereas here in RuneScape, we have 28 skills right now, soon to be 29. And back in the day when we had 20 skills, people were still doing the same thing. Granted, it was a different game and such. It just really raises the question and requires a bit more hollowing out of, you know, what is the strategy that a content developer, content designer takes for shaping the path that players will take to those goals and beyond that?
Well, so this has come up actually. I said I hadn't been thinking about this, but this has actually been coming up internally in design discussions a little bit. Because I've been one of the things I've been banging on about as a design principle is thinking about. Sorry, we have to think about how the content looks on launch, but also how the content looks in 1 year's time, in 5 years' time. Yeah. And an interesting irony of RuneScape content is that broadly speaking, all RuneScape content is endgame content. Because all RuneScape content, with a small number of exceptions, or it's specifically designed as like a novice quest or an onboarding point or something, is designed with our currently engaged. Something like half of our active playing players are maxed, highly engaged players who are looking for something to do. They want new. I suppose time sinks is probably the clearest way to put it. Like, I don't mean the time sink should be cynical, but they want something which is going to take a bit of time to do. They don't want something which just takes an hour and then they're done with it.
So in many ways, working up to kill Raksha is the same sort of endgame goal as working to complete the Writings on the Wall archaeology mystery.
Yeah. Everything that we come out with is sort of, you know, when I drew the distinction between sort of like you know, short, immediately rewarding content versus a bit more of a slow paced, you know, grind content. Most of the content that we put out on a monthly basis is in that latter category. Quests, not really. But even quests are sort of designed, our quests are not, are designed with an end game player in mind, if that makes sense. Because when we ship a quest, we want it to feel like an event for the launch day. We have a hungry community of questers who are waiting for the new quest. And we want that to be something that they can get their teeth into and enjoy in that month and have a lot to talk about and have a lot to solve. That's what we aspire to for a quest. And that's, in put in those terms, that's end game content. Because like if you look at the like, you know, quest caping from scratch.
Yeah.
This is what I mean about looking back at the content. Like, so we'll design a quest which is designed to be a satisfying, we don't always hit this, but intended to be a sort of satisfying full narrative experience for highly engaged questing players.
Like Desert Treasure, let's just say when that launched.
Yeah, and ideally every quest hits that, which means that what we have then is 200 hours of intense endgame questing experience, not a sort of casual, gradual experience that ramps up to an end game. Does that distinction make sense? Like,
it does.
All quests, other than a handful of novice quests, all quests, and even some of the novice quests, they're broken home, right? That's a novice quest technically, but that's not a, that's not a casual, gentle experience that ramps you up.
And,
you know?
And in many ways,
this is something that came up during our prep, right? Like, I was thinking through all of this myself, and like one of the shifts I noticed, especially in like it's been going on a while, like ever since like the sixth age, it feels like quests are much more, you know, before that, the quests sort of mirrored the progression of the character, right? Like as you leveled up, the story sort of grew with you. But now, since everybody is sort of, you know, can do everything, it feels like the quests are shifted much more to just follow the passage of real world time. If that makes sense. So it's much more like you described, like on release, everybody just does it together. And, you know, you can go back and do all the past quests, but, you know, you almost get the most out of the questing experience if you do all the quests on launch and just follow along.
Yeah. Yeah, very much, because that's the primary launch audience for it. So I don't want us to do a less of a good job of that. I think that is quite important. I think the content has to hit on launch.
Yeah.
Not all content does hit on launch, and we're always trying to learn from that. But I'm trying to pay more careful attention to, well, what is this content going to look like in retrospect? So I talked about that in one of the presentations I gave, where I said, like, it's okay for content to become easier over time. Ironically, quests don't really get easier over time, but otherwise it's okay for content to become easier over time because there's so much more of it. Like when we think about like our entire end game, you know, the idea I think that some people espouse, and I think it's probably a pretty good one on paper, is, you know, all content stays relevant forever. But that means that the amount, you know, the amount of end game constantly increases. So it has to become gradually easier over time. The older grinds have to become quicker
and gradually easier over time. You know, I've heard stories of, you know, in Fresh Start and throughout this year, people going back and doing quests like Monkey Madness with, the new level ups and everything that they have, and, you know, being around tier 60 ish on their attack and strength skills and just one shotting that boss in Monkey Madness. And that's what you say to the quest getting easier over time. And one thing I think that's really interesting on that is that if you look at the Legacy of Zamorak storyline, starting from Daughter of Chaos to Succession, they're built in a very different way, at least it presents that way, a different way from previous quests, and that they're accessible to people who don't do combat, don't do puzzles, don't do quests, but at the same time, they provide that vessel for the end game questers, as we've been discussing about. On that, and with that, the thing that you jogged in my head is that with the goal of trying to make all content in effect, I think you said, what was it, stay relevant, or look at it how it is on launch versus how it is a year from now, you can definitely see that in that quest line. And if we're looking at quests as endgame, I think that ticks that box.
I hope so, yeah. I was asked recently about the NPC combat, and it does help with that. I guess like quest combat balancing is an incredibly specific part of design, but actually weirdly relevant to this question because it kind of illustrates the problem. I guess the problem I have is like all content. Again, it's ideal, right? Like we're always working towards this ideal and hitting it whenever we can. Ideally, all content is working for both the end game audience and either the early or mid game audience, depending on where it is. That's why Archglacial has a hard mode, for example, you know, because it's trying to target two different audiences. Because our content hungry audience aren't super interested in something which is pitched for mid game. That's one of the things that went wrong with Manifos. But if we only ever add things on the end, we never fix the mid game. So we have to kind of do both at the same time. And so combat balancing is an interesting example of that, because if we do a quest boss, which is an interesting challenge for players of the level. Well, I mean, we're not even very good at defining this. Let's not discuss combat. we'll do another one on that next year, right? If there's a, say hypothetically speaking, there's a combat boss which is interestingly and well balanced for a sort of mid game level of combat where you'd expect the quest requirements to be in. Anyone who even mildly exceeds those requirements is just going to walk in and just stab it to death.
And you know, we had a fun discussion about that when it came to Succession, and that the combat fight, the sword and board fight in Succession, people who were familiar with defensives and whatnot were going to have a far easier time with some of those fights than people who weren't. And that goes to, I guess, that combat balancing angle on that. And, you know, we're talking about...
Yeah, I got, like, the one combat encounter. I just couldn't do it because, my goodness, I don't know how to use defensive for this.
Really? Okay. And see, for the opposite of me, that was an absolute cakewalk. So that's the that's the difference right there. So
NPC combat does fix that problem, but also there's an obvious, like... I think with Legacy of Zamorak, one of the bits... So this is off topic, but one of the bits of feedback we've taken away from that, I think, is we prefer there to be more of an emphasis on the player character and less on, you know, Moira and Adrastea were very much the characters of that story.
Right.
You're preempting all my questions. Like, that's the next thing I was going to ask. Like, how are you gonna like, in this new world where it's sort of you try to take the player level out of the equation, keep things, you know, personal, and like it's a role playing game after all, right? But there you go. Never mind. Let's move on. I think we've got to
do more at the combat end before we can really handle that at the questing end. But yeah, on the topic of endgame, broadly speaking, I think content just kind of has to work for everybody, and we need to find clever ways of doing that. We've experimented with scaling before. We haven't quite got it right. We've experimented with optional difficulty modes. We haven't quite got that right.
Okay, so in general, the idea when it comes to balance between people who are just starting and the end game is a work in progress and something you've been experimenting with. And you can see it in Legacy of Zamorak, you'd say. Yeah. Okay.
Has the possibility ever crossed the table? Like Guild Wars 2, for example, has a bunch of PvP content, right? And instead of having to level up, if you go to any PvP area, everybody gets boosted up to max level, which I think is... It was 80 when I played. Maybe it's higher now. They get like the same gear. They get like pretty much everything the same. So it's a level playing ground completely. And if you don't care about any of the game, you just want to head straight into PvP, you don't even have to level your character, right? Have you ever thought about that particular aspect? Just, you know, if you go into a quest...
For PvP or in general?
In general. Like, let's say you go in a quest, you're wildly over-leveled. I'm very much... Just sort of take the combat levels of the player back down for the duration of the quest.
Broadly speaking, yes, I'm quite in favor of the idea of, like, rather than sort of NPCizing you, somehow standardizing your power to the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
The skill ceiling in the game is so high that would only be about 30% of the problem, I would expect.
Yeah.
Like with your example of using defensives or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's certainly stuff to explore there. Yeah, this is a quote level 70 quest, so therefore you are combat level 70 or, you know, something like that. Yeah, in theory.
Yeah, some MMOs do that, right? Like, they literally, if you're walking to like an area, they will. I mean, it's much easier in this game because often you have like one level, right? And in RuneScape, I can imagine it's just so multifaceted. You can't really skill 28. Skills depending on every individual.
Again, it's kind of a problem we need to look at the combat end. And then in theory, it could. Well, but I mean, you could do the same analysis for combat as well. I mean, so when Abyssal Lords came out, I can't remember the levels of the three mobs now. They're all above 100, aren't they?
Yeah,
I think they're all above 100. So, I mean, obviously above 100 is quite a broad variety, but broadly speaking, that's all endgame.
Yeah,
right?
And I mean, at that point, you start also wading into the problem that in modern RuneScape combat level really doesn't mean much on NPCs anymore,
which
I think I heard one of the combat council people say they wanted to address, but that's...
I very much want to fix that.
Yeah, because that's neither here nor there right now. And everything we've been talking about factors into making a goal in RuneScape, deciding what to do. And this all points to how you play RuneScape from the time you get off that boat, you go through the Burthorpe tutorials, you make a goal, and you're encouraged to go into the game and complete that goal and repeat. You initially have a very guided system through the path system. Things open up after that, but then we have our concrete goals we talked about, like quests and skill milestones and whatnot. And then at the end of the game, it feels like you're almost left to define your goals in a more open-ended manner and repeat this said process. Is this what you would consider RuneScape's core loop? And for people who are unaware, a core loop is what happens in a video game, the way you play a specific set of content, how a specific set of content works at its very core principles.
Should I have a rant about the phrase core? I hate it. And the phrase core loop, which gets used all the time.
Okay.
If you Google core loop and look at the Google image search, I think it's the first example. It's not a loop. the core loop is like kill monster, get gear, equip gear, kill stronger monster, get stronger gear, equip stronger gear. So like it's a loop, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like people use it to describe just gameplay in general. So I always snidely point that out. Anyway, sorry. What was the question? Yes, it's about goal setting yourself. Yeah, I mean, we were talking about that earlier, right? Like your example was essentially player driven goals. I guess that comes down to the question again of like how we define endgame and how we think about endgame. Because when we do, like, again, with your very initial question, you're kind of restating it here of sort of like, well, I'm maxed, right? I'm maxed. I've done everything. What do I do now? Maybe I'm even comped. What do I do now?
Even in general, like before maxing, I feel the game is very, like RuneScape specifically, because it is so multifaceted and there's so many different things you can do in parallel, right? There's multiple paths of progression rather than a single level you're boosting. I feel that there's this framework around who will help you pick like a certain goal, like maybe the quest requirements for this quest or the combat levels for this boss. You pick that as a goal, and that's sort of the thing you're working towards before you unlock new goals, pick a new goal, etc. So like it feels like the game is sort of, I mean, you say maybe it's not the core loop, but it feels like that is sort of the
RuneScape is absolute strongest, right? I want to do something. Okay, what do I need? Well, I need to get this. Yes. Okay, well, what do I need to do to get this? Well, I don't have to do this quest, but if I do this quest, it gives me this item, which will make it way more efficient to get that.
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I was having that experience on my account. I was live streaming of like, okay, well, I want to do Shattered Worlds to unlock Bladed Dive, which obviously I don't need to anymore, but I want to go unlock Bladed Dive. So I need a halberd. So I need
why Dive became.
No, I've been, what's the right way to put it? Like, I've been quite dogged about that. Like when I bring something up that's bothering me personally, you're not allowed to fix it. I was a bit uncomfortable with that one because I'm like, I feel like I have to personally accomplish something before I'm allowed to nerf it. You see what I mean?
Right.
And just to avoid that problem. But then it's like, well, why should everyone else suffer just because I am? You know?
and that's the thing. And this is what made Fresh Start so appealing is that a couple of us were sitting and like, ooh, we never thought of doing it this way before. This didn't exist when we did it the first time. If we add this, this, and this, this will make this skill more efficient along the way. And in many ways, that's what drew me to Fresh Start, is doing things in that different way of making things more efficient and in effect changing up the paths of what weren't available before on that. And I guess the follow-up from the goal question on this is that, can you carry this from level one all the way to end game in RuneScape in a sustainable way? And what that means in a more simple manner is player driven goal, or is player gameplay driven by goals something that's sustainable for RuneScape from level one all the way up to 200 mil in a skill.
I think to an extent it kind of has to be, as Sirian pointed out, like the game is so sort of open in its structure and allows you, there sort of is no strictly defined goal. There's a few that you could pick, like Prif and Invention and maxing and getting to PVM as quickly as possible. You could pick a few sort of early end game goals like that. But other than that, the game doesn't really have a particularly, it doesn't have any particularly obvious standout, like, well, this is the objective of why I'm playing. There's no hit the level cap. There's no get to the end of the current story, except in as much as you can get the quest cape, you know, but we're not sort of storyline driven in that sense, or we haven't been historically. So I think to an extent you kind of have to, right, from the start. A lot of our initial sort of tutorial stuff or sort of post-tutorial early guidance stuff has been exploring the idea of allowing the player to choose what they want to do. I think our current system's in quite a good place in that regard. I was quite impressed the most recent time I played through it. It sort of allows you, it sort of says, would you like to, does it sound like something you'd like to do? Because if so, I can tell you, otherwise you can go do something else, you know? And I guess that's a really good place for RuneScape to be in, you know, of sort of, you can make a whole suit of armor for yourself. You can grind all the, you know, because at level one, you can make a whole suit of armor for yourself. Yeah. And also you can get your smithing all the way to 99 and make an entire suit of trim masterwork for yourself, you know, and that's a legitimate like account goal. Obviously it seems like nothing to someone who's maxed, but to someone who's in the mid game, that's quite a big long-term objective.
Right. And I see what you mean. You could get 99 mining and smithing without doing anything else first.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel that, like, you know, make setting these goals and the game sort of being there as an assistant, helping you achieve these, that's when the game is at its strongest. Like, if I think back of the times I had the most fun with the game, or like the periods where I felt most accomplished, they were almost always sort of, you know, picking a specific goal and hitting that, even though, you know, it's not, the game doesn't tell me to do it. It accommodates it.
I feel like the thing that we could do better, especially in the sort of early mid game, is helping the player to understand what goals are available. Because if I go ask on Reddit or ask in my clan, they'll tell me, you know, people will have different opinions, but they'll say, oh yeah, grind out Invention or grind out Prif or, you know, grind out Questscape if you're in a questing clan, you know. But people will sort of give you their opinion on what you should be working to motivate you through the mid game. And I think we could do a better job of that. The model I was thinking of was, I added it in The Sims 2, that when you create your sim, they pick like a life aspiration.
Oh,
like, what I really want to do is walk on the moon, or what I really want to do is be a movie star. And then that's kind of like their life goal. And they get happy when they're working towards their life goal. And we could have something like that where like, you know, it could be just a conversation.
What is your RuneScape life goal?
Right, exactly. Like, what is it you want to do? You kind of get elements of that in the path system, but it's kind of more focused on your immediate achievements and not like, We could do a better job, I think, of sort of showing players what sort of mid-game goals exist and what they could want to work towards. Would you like to complete all the quests? Would you like to be a master artisan? Would you like to be would you like to reach the fabled Elven City? You know, like there's a few sort of standout goals that are going to be quite an investment to work towards, and I think we just could do better at highlighting what they are.
And then also the
obvious extra one, I don't, leave me alone, I don't want to be told what to do, I'll figure it out for myself, you know. Like, that's quite important as well.
Because my guess is that if you look at that, like, early game, there's the path system, and if you ask people, they will probably be end game players and be like, oh yeah, just max or get to Priv, they're fairly late in the game, and I'm guessing there's a gap in the middle, right, where
how big is that gap?
Yeah, like I've not seen anyone say, oh, you should just do these quests to get access to Manifos or something like that, right? Like that, you know, it always feels that there's that gap in the middle where there's actually, I mean, now with Fresh Start Worlds, I think, you know, I've seen people like talking about it and be excited about it. That seems to have come back a little bit more. That's really good.
That's partly what we were trying to get at with the puzzle box.
Okay.
And if you think about the old comp design where we were talking about like trying to take some of these long term goals and break them down a little bit so that they become smaller goals. it's tricky. The game isn't really set up to afford that. But the milestone capes as well are supposed to do a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, and I actually just wanted to pull on that thread because we were kind of headed there. I was going to say that your compre work, the complicated compre work, as we call it, the one that didn't fully get into game, did a wonderful job in terms of splitting things out like that and, in effect, giving you those goals once you were familiar with the game about things you could do on that front. And at the time, I feel like it was an update that I really didn't like that much, but over time it feels like it's evergreened in a way. And in some ways I also feel like we're starting to see aspects of that with Master Max coming in and such.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, because you want goals that go up and goals that, sorry, you want goals that go even further, but also goals that don't go as far. And I guess that's almost the opposite problem to endgame, right? Of like players who are nowhere near endgame, we need to get them there. We need to give them something to do. We need to give them goals to work on that aren't so intimidating.
Yeah, I think I'm a good case for that. Because I don't get to play that much, because that's what adult life is about. Full-time job, you have other things to do. You know, you get to play like a few hours per week and you try to make the most of that. But you know, if I look at the Comcape like requirements list, I'm like, yeah, that's not happening, you know, ever. So I really appreciate sort of the smaller goals that the game lets me do, and sometimes I need to set them myself, but I'm sure that if the game sort of broke them down more for me, I would definitely work towards them more. So
And then that comes into the question of horizontal versus vertical goals in that regard. And that's one thing that compre work illustrated well. And in some ways, I'm not sure that players think of it in that perspective, where you can either, in effect, go very deep into one specific thing or branch out into other different goals around RuneScape. And I realize what we're doing, and I don't know if we intended this, Sirion, and maybe it's with Mod Jack's help here. We're in effect defining RuneScape's endgame as we progress through the show, I think, if that makes sense. It feels like that's what we're doing. At
maybe
least.
Maybe that was my evil master plan in becoming this now solo.
I hope everyone's enjoying our special with Mod Jack covering RuneScape's endgame. Right now, though, I just want to take a moment and thank some Patreon supporters. The support of these people and others like them allow us to do here what we do at RSBNB Update. And in particular, this week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Beekeeper Steve, Bryflex, Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Elo Matey, Enrique V., Plaza Man, Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Ling01, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Nick G, OTR Gamer, Pernasius, Ricky A, RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Stobeve, The Naked Captain, The Dabbin' Goat, Tim, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and each and every one of these people allow us to do what we do here at RSBNB Update each and every week. And you can learn more about our offerings on Patreon by going to patreon.com/RSBNB. There we have a whole collection of monthly bits or monthly bonus shows. You can gain access to that entire back catalog for starting as little as $1 a month. And these cover everything from tier lists on daily escape, skills, and bosses to our discoveries of Legacy Combat earlier this year, and of course our most recent What Makes Holiday Events in RuneScape Special. You also gain access to that entire back catalog, and you gain a mention in our show notes for as little as $1 a month. We also have our VIP tier for $3 a month, where you get a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, a rank on Discord, chat channel access, and high-quality stereo versions of the show, amongst everything else in our $1 tier. We also have our insider tier, where for $5 a month, you can give the ultimate gift, and in return, you gain access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And with that, you'll also get a shout-out on the podcast each and every week. Now, of course, RSBNB Update is built and shaped by our community, and we couldn't do it without you. So thanks so much, everyone. And now with that, back to our discussion with Mod Jack on RuneScape's Endgame. Do you ever think that we could go back to seeing more of those kind of goals come into game that were in that full comp rework over time. Because I mentioned Master Max, but do you think that would be something that would...
I would like to. I think what we were trying to achieve there is still quite important in terms of breaking things down into sub goals. That's why I mentioned the puzzle box, because one of the possible ways of breaking something like comp down is, so we want to keep comp, but then we want sort of sub comp, so you can work on part of it.
Yeah,
that's what you want. And another way of doing that would be to do it by year. So you know, you can complete, you know, 2018 or something like that, and then at least that's okay. Part of it, you know. And so that the Infernal Puzzle Box is kind of a version of that. You could see the Pontifex Ring.
I was just thinking of the name.
Arguably, the Pontifex Ring does a better job than the Puzzle Box does, even though the Puzzle Box came later. But it's, yeah, the Puzzle Box is complicated. We're going to be trying the same thing again. Well, I say next year in 2023. Happy New Year, everybody. But yeah, we'll be doing the same thing again with the idea of sort of participating in the storyline, where storyline is not just quests, it's the updates, you know. What the puzzle box doesn't do particularly well. So we used to joke back during the comp rework, about, you know, because people used to say there are a lot of arguments about the word completionism and its dictionary definition. And we talked about sort of like three levels of completion: participation, and then completion, and then I guess what we would call in RuneScape trimmed completion, you know. You've not only done it, you've absolutely done it to death. So participation being, I've gone there, I've seen the update, I know what it is, I've had a go. Completion, you know, I've unlocked everything. And then trim, I've unlocked the unreasonable thing, I've unlocked the gold title.
It's to go outside and play some football or something like that. Yeah.
And the puzzle box kind of hits that sense of participation, right? It asks you to participate in the update. And we actually found that very difficult to design for, because we were locked into a linear unlock design.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the wilderness events, for example, 4 is a really odd number of events. It's slightly too annoying if you're trying to grind it out. If you just want to get through that quest line as quickly as possible, 4 events is kind of annoying to have to do.
I've heard that. Yeah.
But if you're playing in that month,
it's nothing.
On release, 4 events is trivial. You complete it in like within 2 hours of launch, if you catch the Bloodwood Tree one, right? You just do it instantly and you're done.
Yeah.
And then there's no further reward for doing any more events. And so it feels like it doesn't... We actually found it much more harder to design for than we expected. And then we had the same problem again, obviously, with the farming. It was complete coincidence that 2 updates in a row ended up having essentially time... They weren't intended as time gates, but the nature of the content was such that it was implicitly time gated.
Right.
Actually interacted very poorly with the puzzle box, and meant that the puzzle box requirements don't feel great as participation rewards, but they also don't feel at all like completion rewards. So what we should have done in retrospect is that each tier of the puzzle box, these are sort of participation tier to unlock it and move on, but then you upgrade that tier of the puzzle box by doing, you know, so you do 1 event to unlock it, and then 10 events to upgrade it, and then 100 events to upgrade it further, and then you've got your participation comp and trim for each update already defined as you go through.
I recognize, I do some of my own game design. I recognize this struggle so much, where you're designing something and it doesn't feel right. And in hindsight, you're like, oh, we just need to have these tiers, like participation, completion, something. And like, oh, it all makes sense now. This is just a way better. Yeah. So sometimes you just need to, you know, put names on things and it all works. And the thing I really liked about the Pontifex Ring is like, I could just buy myself out of doing the bosses and getting the what's it called, an anima, I think. But it did encourage me, like most of the things I did myself, I didn't do all the bosses, but like I think that was a really good balance. So
And another thing with the Pontifex Ring is that I feel like that also had a huge amount of community push behind it, because correct me if I'm wrong, but was it not initially the plan to have the Pontifex Ring as a passive effect, or was that always planned, or was that done because the players wanted it?
Oh, I don't remember. Okay. Do you mean the end game?
Yeah, the end one where you put the 5,000 of each in, then it becomes a passive effect rather than needing to wear the ring.
I don't remember whether that was initially planned or not.
Because I saw a lot about that in the community as the various tiers were being unlocked, and it felt like it was something that was community suggested. So I don't know if that was
the it was. Case I of... don't. I don't think it was sort of held back by dev on purpose.
Okay.
With the puzzle box, the being able to put it in the pocket slot later was, but I don't think we do that again. I think it feels a bit cheap.
All right. Fair enough.
I think it's there's an awkward balance of I talked about it in the most recent live stream, right? Like there's an awkward balance of if you give too much, you have nothing left to work towards. But if you give too little, it feels mean-spirited, and it's really, really hard to find that right.
Mm.
To find that right balance of like, well, you know, if an item is too useful and too flexible, you have nothing to work towards. But if an item is just, if you have to work for 1,000 hours to unlock every tiny QOL improvement, that just feels awful. You know, we don't want that at all. So it's very difficult to find the right balance there. Yeah. I mean, sorry, that is directly relevant to endgame because that's the kind of thing we're talking about, right?
Exactly. Like exactly.
If you unlock all your QOL benefits too fast and too quickly, then what are you even doing in the endgame? You know, what are you unlocking?
Well, yeah. I think
what are you earning?
What we've realized on the question of, you know, level 1 to 200 mil or 1 to endgame sustainably is that endgame can start at level 1, like you said, with the mining and smithing to 99 if you really wanted to, or, you know, chasing down quests from a lore angle on that. So in many ways the player perspective of the PVM boss's endgame is true, but there's also that other entirely different endgame that has been concocted with that, which brings us to the question of perception, constructed versus reactive endgames in terms of what we have today being built on what the players were already doing. And you know, this is something RuneScape coined a number of years back and was one of the first games to do it, coining it as a live game and bringing player feedback into the process of building the game, because this was at a time when not many people did that. And what this led to is the need and the feeling for a strong end game because of the people who are playing the game and just their wish for having their existing big time investments and allowing that to keep snowballing on itself. But this leads to the question, to what extent is this the majority of the players, or is this just an audience that's been chosen to be optimized for in terms of endgame, so to speak?
It's a hard question to answer quantitatively, but my estimate would be it's about half of the currently playing players. So because RuneScape's player base fluctuates up and down a lot. So our player numbers are relatively steady, but the players that are returning to and leaving the game is surprisingly frequent. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's not the same group of players playing steady. It's a pretty consistent in and out. So whenever we're looking at players, we have to gather, like we have to pick up. So it's like, are we talking about players who just played in the last month or something like that, or the last week, or, you know, how do we count it? But so broadly speaking, it's about half players are sort of very highly engaged. They're not necessarily maxed or comped, but they've done as much as they care to, and now they want more content to play that they enjoy. So roughly half would be my take. A sort of end game in the sense that question is asking of, like, give me the next big thing to do. In terms of designing for end games specifically, to a large extent, like we are doing that all the time. Like, I mean, like Zamorak, for example, would be
that's a very good example.
Is explicitly an end game update. As is, say, Abyssal Lords. What else got to compare it with? So, if I think of Garden of Kharid as an example, is an update which is primarily focused on fixes. So in that regard, you could consider that to be depending on your perspective, you could consider that to be an early game update or an end game update. It hits both, I would say.
I know lots of people definitely considered that end game with the amount of growth potions I saw being dropped there.
if your end game, oh, there's a whole extra kettle of fish, right? If your end game is farming runs, then that was an end game update for you because it was a QOL update that hit you, right?
Yeah.
But it also hit, you know, if you're a player who's only been playing for a week and you're trying to figure farming out and your plants keep dying, then it's also an early game.
That's a wonderful quality of life update for you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 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 Um, But broadly speaking, we're trying to hit everybody all the time, I would say.
And I think that's good, because I remember long time ago there would be updates that would come out, and this was of course pre 2010, where I would feel at the time, and this was I'd say before I played RuneScape, hardcore and had decent combat stats and such. Of course, combat was more difficult then, but that's a different story. There were updates, that I was completely locked out of for years, or that, there'd have to be huge, substantial investments to go into to even just touch. Whereas what you've just said is that, most updates that come out, whether it be Garden of Karid or Zamorak, are something that the entire spectrum of players can interact with, which is actually a good thing. And I know in talking with Mon Raman on the design of Zamorak, that was something that I think had a lot of learning experiences in there for the team. But as well, like you said, scratch that itch for the very high end of the combat PVM community. But for people who are just wanting to, go in and do the Aftermath mini quest, yeah, there's story mode. And it was the boss in many ways. From I don't know what the bare minimum level you'd need to do Zamorak Aftermath is, Sirion.
I did it in 70 gear. Okay. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do it by myself. Right. Stu was carrying me.
Okay, fair.
I went in. Who did I go in with? Stu and I can't remember who else was there. I can't remember the mod names either. Kalaya, someone else.
I mean, Sirion, you're not a combat person, and I think you did it in story mode, right?
Yeah, you took me. We did.
I did. Right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
You dragged me, I should say, more like. But yeah. And what I find really interesting, and something that comes to mind with me, is like back in the day, you would have updates, right, that you didn't have the level for to do on launch. And now almost everybody can do the thing on launch, which means that the community has become it's much more of a community thing, right? Like, instead of you personally getting access to content, it's very much the community as a whole is getting access to content. And some people might jump straight into hard mode, whereas other people are like, where's the story mode button, right? But yeah, it's a really interesting way to look at it and sort of see that transformation going on.
And in that sense,
everybody's just experiencing the same game, whether we call it endgame or not. It's just...
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at when I say all content is endgame content, because for that engaged group of players, every new update is just, well, I've done everything else, what have you got for me,
Yeah, and I mean, I know people who absolutely abhor, the Herbruns and whatnot, and that is their RuneScape endgame right now, doing Herbruns to get their comp back.
That's a tricky one when we ship a comp wreck they don't want to do, but that goes back to those players earlier, right, of like... Do you want to minimize the amount you have to play in order to tick the boxes, or do you want to maximize the amount you have to play in order to tick the boxes?
I mean, it's not like I absolutely love the farming skill, but I get where these people are coming from, and that is, not something that they can just, sit down and grind out in an hour. At the best case, they're resigned to being able to do these runs every 80 minutes or 60 minutes once they get the update. Or get the upgrades in there, and as a result of that, it adds a bit of a sour feeling on that. But at the same time, you can also see how that's both endgame and quality of life content for people on there. And I feel like turning myself up on my head right now, because you said that, and this is not a slight against you or the game, but it feels like everything with the idea that everything is endgame. If that's the case, that's just a very weird thing in the entire gaming world. And maybe if that's what RuneScape's endgame is, that's 100% okay. Or, I don't know, Sirion, what do you think at this point?
What do I think? I'm thinking many things, but, it's what I have observed. So, hearing right now is things I have seen, and it feels that's what's happening. there's a level of nostalgia in me, right? Which is like, I would like updates to come out that, I can work towards and look forward to, but that doesn't really happen anymore. So
you mean another priff, another invention?
Exactly, right? And that doesn't, that, I mean, part of, I mean, that's where we get skills, I guess, every few years to sort
yeah.
of get.
I mean, yeah, a skill is doing that. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm still on my archaeology grind. I'm not super fast, but I'm absolutely loving it still, right? Like, that's the kind of content that I'm there for. So I don't know if you can call it endgame content. Like, I think as long as we keep setting those goals, great.
Well, based on our definitions here today, I think you can.
Every new skill is endgame content.
It's reductive. It's a little bit reductive to divide RuneScape players into quester skillers and combat, but it's not wildly inaccurate. And there's a lot to be gained from that breakdown. And so if you think of those three as two, I mean, obviously there are players that cross multiple boundaries, but if you think of players in those categories, then questers are either all end game or no end game, depending. If you define it as tailored content is not end game, then questing is never end game. Or if you define it as end game is content which is supposed to be a big deal on launch because it's got to carry the month, then questing is basically all end game. It's like 200 hours of end game and then you're done.
Extinction was definitely that repeatable. This year.
Right, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, Daughter of Chaos was smaller in scope, right? But it was still supposed to be a meaty narrative experience. And we receive feedback on it on that basis. Like if someone says, I didn't find it a meaty narrative experience, we don't go, oh, well, it wasn't supposed to be. We don't care. We go, oh, okay, maybe we'll do better next time. Then, right. You know? if we think about skilling has that kind of blurred line of like the skilling end game kind of is... I guess you're grinding to max and then you're trying to make money. But skilling has that sort of blurry line of end game where it's not really clear where it starts. Some people would define it at 90, some people would define it at 99, some people would define it at grinding out your final 200 millions, you know.
I guess skilling is one of these interesting ones because it's part of an ecosystem, right? Like a lot of skilling outputs are inputs for like the combat people, right? Like I can see people go to like overload level or like supreme overload, like all those milestones, but they're not relevant back into skilling. They sort of feed into the other aspects of the game. And the same with like skill requirements for quests, which puts skilling in sort of a weird spot, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. If we use an indefinitely repeatable definition of endgame, then skilling, a lot of skilling is lacking that. As a okay, well, I've ground out whether you get to 99, 120, 200 million doesn't really matter. But I've earned the ability to provide something of value. If my end game is skilling, then it makes sense to me that my end game is providing goods for the market.
Yeah, and
that isn't quite working, I would say, at the moment.
Right,
that aspect of the game has really deteriorated, with the problem with, you know, drop tables being too generous or skilling materials not being useful enough, or it's too easy to provide them for yourself.
I want to really see what the results of the Garden of Charid update is on that, because that could provide an interesting angle on that and more opportunities for other skills to tick those boxes.
I keep talking about the Rude Value Improvement update, which is years ago by now, I think, and how I still absolutely love that update because I think it made such a big difference to runecrafting.
And that could, give somebody an endgame of, you know, producing water runes day in or day out, or soul runes or something, right?
There's the frustration I have with dealing with this problem is that the skilling endgame sort of interferes with the Iron Man endgame.
Right.
And I don't see an obvious way to fix that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's another entirely separate discussion. But
Man is a topic.
I think there's a definition of endgame where maxing is the skilling endgame. And then in answer to the question, well, what do you do once you've maxed? I think the answer has to be provide something of value to the economy. And so we need to do more to allow that to be true, because it largely isn't, I think, at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, enough of the skills aren't useful, or the goods that they provide aren't valuable enough.
I used to
fire making.
I used to be a huge proponent of the prestige system, and back when you guys did Rune Labs and whatnot, I was one of the people behind getting prestige on the poll and whatnot. And my views have evolved on that at somewhat over the years, to the point where I don't even know if that would be a good idea anymore.
I don't think prestiging is solving the problem.
Because it would in effect just put you in this loop of continuously getting XP, but like you said, you're not providing something to the economy. You're not enriching other aspects of the game.
There's a particular player for whom, I mean, you mentioned it with sort of, you don't really want to get to 200 million because then the XP stops popping up, right? And like, there's a particular, so that, you remember that guy that had I haven't heard from him for years now. He had our agility maxed on 4 accounts. I think he made it to 5 in the end. He had 200 right. million agility XP on 5 different accounts. God. And that kind of player, prestigious hitting, right? I mean, 200 million, I think RuneScape players sometimes do lose perspective on this a little bit. 200 million, even with RS3's faster XP rates, is a very long grind. That is not a small grind. That is an extremely long grind.
And agility of all skills.
Agility, right? This was before Silverhawks. There is a kind of player who just wants to grind out a billion experience, right? And prestiging hits that player. But I don't think that's the vast majority of players. Like grinding out a billion experience, I don't think it's
right.
High on
that. And it also comes down to the fact that if you brought in a prestige system like that, what message would that be sending to the people who, you know, do take part in the scaling endgame?
That sort of brings me to like that. That's always a question that I have in mind when it comes to like achievements and max and comp and trimmed comp, right? Like I know people that are very much like, if the game puts it in the game as like a tick box to tick, that's not something I need to do, right? Like there's people who literally take the game, see it as a to-do list, and then go and grind that. Not because they want to grind it, but because the game tells them, this is what you need to do to quote-unquote complete the game. How do you balance sort of making sure that people can choose goals versus like, I've seen people burn out on these goals, right? Because they take it too seriously.
That's a tension as well. That's why we don't look at the true trim list as like, well, here's what we need to add to the trim.
Good.
And that is something we're conscious of. And not every record. I mean, I mentioned like 200 million is like 200 million sort of implicitly a goal, right? We never said it was, but it's implicitly as a goal. The fact
that was my concern when the Master Max Cape came out is that you look at skills that have true 120s in them: invention, archaeology, dungeoneering, slayer, farming, herblore, but everything else still only goes to 99. Is it right to be putting the shiny object of Master Max out there, encouraging people to get 120s in skills that are 99s?
I think the feeling with Master Max is that a few years ago it wouldn't have been appropriate, but you know, we just look at the number of people that are already eligible for it. And broadly speaking, when we're talking about those people who are sort of like, anything the game asks me to do, I will do. 120 all is not anywhere near as unreasonable as it would have been sort of 6 years ago.
And a chunk of them probably already have had that.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So it's very much just a judgment call based on what seems plausible at the time. So like right now, if you ask me right now, is a 200 million all cape a good idea? I would say no. Probably it will never be a good idea because it's such a weird thing to like. It's such a weird, arbitrary technical limit target. It doesn't mean anything within the game.
And
it's integers, damn.
Yeah. And I mean, with that, and I don't know if this is something you want to go into, but has there ever been the discussion? Because I know it's been talked about with increasing GE limits beyond 2.1 bill and 200 mil is done for the sake of decimal points. Has there ever been a thought of increasing the max XPs beyond 200s in all skills at that point?
We'll have to look at that problem eventually if we run out of 120s. Because back to your original question, like, what do I do once I'm maxed? There's a limit to how much we can design indefinitely repeatable content.
Yeah.
And in that regard, we have to release. I drew it on a stream, right? I drew a little circle of like, we ship goals, we make the goals easier, we ship more goals. And like, ultimately, you will run out of things to do. If you're maxed, if you're comped, if you're trimmed, if you're true-tripped, if you've hit whatever limit it is that you consider reasonable, we have to release more content. I mean, that's our job. We do it all the time, right? And that does mean new skills, and it means new things to work towards and new tick lists to tick off. And so I guess the answer is wait for the next one, essentially, in that regard. So in that regard, like, we do need to keep adding things for players to do, new skills or 120s. And eventually, if all the skills have gone to 120, then we do need to add something else. And so at that point, maybe that's the right time to look at, you know, actually XP can go even higher.
Okay.
We're a way off 120 in all skills. You know, that's
yeah, 120 all just
we've
happened.
We've got plenty more to do. So
yeah, and I'd imagine more skills along the way.
I'm just hearing people like screaming in their sleep now, like 120 agility. What are you doing to me?
Well, and I mean that opens an even deeper philosophical question about skills that are in a place where they have, you know, people who have 120s, people have 200 mils, but at the same time, there's certain skills that, you know, could do with a fresh lick of paint. And I know around our parts here at the podcast, we think agility is one of those for a number of reasons. And as a result of that, I think you're right, Sirion. People would be screaming if they were told, you know, get 120 agility without, you know, a proper, you know, addition onto agility or something like that along the way.
You know what's another skill that's really screaming out for that? Construction.
Oh, yes.
We should make a new training method and a new set of rewards for construction. That would be excellent. Let's do that in 2023.
Oh, that's definitely something we're going to be just waiting to see what happens when that comes out with, because, you know, contracts scratch the itch a bit, but when it came down to it at the end
such
of the day, it was different than what we were thinking. So hopefully the fort, and I resist the urge to call it player owned after the most recent live stream, because it's definitely not that. But bringing this all back to Endgame and RuneScape, and, you know, we talked about how in some ways quests are Endgame, the Garden of Karid is an Endgame content. So I'm going to modify this a bit. Is there ever going to be a time where there could be direct proactive investment in the end game of, let's say, achievements or skilling on that way to provide those more clearly defined paths?
I guess the challenge we always have is bundling something into an update. Like, ironically, the hunger for content is the thing that makes that challenging. So a system revision as an update can work. I mean, what's a good an obviously end game focused system update would be something like what, drop logs,
Slayer log, yeah,
or the boss one,
yeah,
is a system aimed pure. I mean, that's a pure end game update, right? There's no real mid game benefit to that. That's not something you should be worrying about if you're in the mid game. In terms of thinking about like investing in end game further, almost I would say I feel like the pressure is almost the other way.
Okay.
As we've been kind of talking as we go through, sort of we're almost over investing in end game, and so my pressure slightly is. We can't stop doing that. We can't stop shipping content that our most content-hungry players want to play. But we do need to find ways to make that content useful outside of that context, as with the examples we've gone over of things like story mode and that sort of thing. You know, would you say, per your question, would you feel like we aren't investing enough in endgame? Would you frame it that way?
Well, it comes down to the pathing, right? In terms of figuring out what to do after you hit that max, after you hit that comp. And maybe it's just a matter of discovery, because like you said, the boss collection log is there, but that's not something that the people who don't do bossing are going to do. And maybe there needs to be some other kind of endgame-esque, and not necessarily a copy paste and collection log, maybe there needs to be something like that for the skilling side. And, you know, to go back to Sirion's archaeology grind, the 120 archaeology grind, I feel like one of the things that definitely made that skill was the collection log there. Yeah. And I don't know how you would retrofit that into existing skills, honestly, because it feels like that was
core part of the design achievements, right? Like, I think for crafting, like cut one of each gem and things like that. But yeah, it doesn't quite hit the same as the collector's log, for sure.
Right. And yeah, crafting's in a spot too.
If we're thinking about skilling, you could I think often we get poor responses to updates. Timber, I was really struggling to understand this about 5-6 years ago, and Timber broke it down for me, I think, pretty well. Let me see if I can remember what he told me. That it was, do you remember when we released the elite skilling outfits, and the higher your level in the skill, the more frequently you get fragments, I believe, and they're very light. And if you're at 200 million, you're very likely to get them. And then Menophos also had a similar sort of problem. The high level engaged player base, our observation would be, don't like being asked to go and do a thing that they've already leveled through.
Right.
So the achievement, we pushed it. What's the, there's an achievement, I can't remember what it's called now. There's an achievement in mining, which requires you to mine 100 of each ore. And if you do so, it upgrades the capacity of your ore box.
Yep.
That's cheeky. And that actually did annoy some people. Like 100 of each ore, which is nothing. We're conscious of, if I have 99 mining, we get very strong feedback. I do not want to have to go and mine bronze. Don't make me go mine bronze. Why are you doing
I love that achievement.
Me too. But like, I would have put in 1,000 and a 10,000 one. But like, in terms of thinking about things like collection logs, you know, you could do, I mean, I don't know, how do you do this? Okay, let's say you add in like 10 types of, God, we've used geodes already, haven't we? Rare mineral formations, right? Oh, it's a mineral formation in the shape of a bum, right? And we put in 10 different mineral formations at each of the 10 tiers of ore, and you have to go, and they've got like a tiny drop rate, and you have to go collect them all, right? And to complete the log, you've got to get all the bronze, all the copper ones, and all the tin ones, and all the iron ones. My impression is that would go down very poorly. I do not think that would be a well-received piece of content, because asking me to go mine lower tiers of ore isn't something that maxed players want to do.
Unless there's a very clear benefit to something that they're working on along the way, I guess.
Yeah. We didn't get a similar response to Trim Masterwork, although I guess because, you know, you need 16,000 or something of each ore, but you can just buy it. I don't think that was anywhere near as poorly received. My inclination is that sort of collection log would not go down very well. And so thinking about skilling and what we could do to improve the end game of skilling, I think tradable stuff works better than something a lot along the lines of a drop.
And then you get money along the way.
Is it something that you can't backfit on an existing skill? Because like, I could imagine that if you backfit sort of the collector's log on archaeology, it would go down the same, but because everybody had to do it sort of as part of the skill.
Yeah, with archaeology, it was like, well, if you consciously skipped it in order to level up faster, that's up to you. You know, you knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
And boy, you're going to suffer if you do that. At least that's been my experience on Fresh Start with the boosted XP rates.
And if you now go, and if you want to now go back and grind out Caradet, you can. Like, it's kind of entirely up to you. But yeah, my interpreter, it would be like adding some ridiculous drop log. Imagine if we just added a load of giant mole rare drops. Like one in a billion giant mole something, I don't know, parts of a giant mole mosaic, right? And you've got to collect all the parts, right? There's like 1,000-piece giant mole mosaic, and each one has a 1% drop log, and you can get duplicates, right? And that, like, no one wants to do that. That's horrible content.
No, I'd even extend that out to even the higher level, in that if you put something like that on, you know, the Abyssal Slayer creatures or Beastmaster and Yakka, that would still be equally poorly received. So
drop log is fun on and bosses I'm doing anyway for Reaper, or because they're actually worth doing, right? Then it's a fun
and in many ways then and this was in we had a discussion about this, I think it was this year that this change was made, where the extreme potions were made tradable in Herb Lore. Our group who works on this show was split down the middle about whether or not this was a good thing or not, believe it or not. I was initially in the camp that it wasn't a good thing, but I was convinced that it was once I saw that it was going to make life easier for people who, you know, wanted to make overloads, but at the same time, it was also going to make life easier for people who were leveling up Herb Lore. So I came to see that as a good update. And in many ways, the reason I mentioned that is because that's in the same vein of what you were saying of add things to skills that are end game like, that let people reap the rewards as they level up with that.
Yeah.
And And, you know, people can choose to focus on the quest solely. People can choose to focus on the PVM solely, the skilling solely, and so on and so forth, wherever you want to play your RuneScape, I guess. But at the end of the day, we're seeing all these synergies that tie together that you are rewarded and you get all the benefits for doing that at the end of the day. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
Sirion, do you have anything else before I move on to the big... to the big kahuna, the big question?
No, I think I got all the questions in that I came up with. Probably I'll be thinking of something in, like,
yeah,
tomorrow. But
what would RuneScape's ideal endgame be? If you could, you know, let's just say we're starting from first principles. You're designing this game from the ground up. Nothing exists right now. You've set yourself in the world. What would the ideal endgame be?
I mean, the ideal, I think, is that people can continue to play and enjoy the game as long as they want. That's what we're trying to get out of it, I think, right? Like, because I mean, as over the course of this discussion, we've talked about all sorts of different player types and what they're trying to get out of the game, and some of them have different ideas of what an endgame needs to be, and some of them have almost conflicting ideas of what an endgame needs to be. But the ideal is everyone can continue playing the game indefinitely. I don't think that works for quests. I mean, we were joking about the AI quests earlier. I can't see a way to make that work for quests. But in terms of skilling and PVM, I think that's not unachievable in terms of, like, the game continues to be rewarding. There's something for you to log in and play all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say for the bulk of 2021 and a good chunk of this year, my daily RuneScape endgame was the Reaper tasks on that. And in many ways, I made PVM my endgame. And I finally saw how, you know, the PVM community can see that as endgame. And, you know, I wasn't going as hardcore as many other people, but it definitely was one of those things that was an endgame that I chose and created as a result of that. So I saw PVM as one of them, but I feel like that's a very high-level perspective to say anything that allows the player to continue playing indefinitely on that. And, you know, I think we can go back to the aspect of RuneScape being a live game, a game that players have an impact on either directly or indirectly in the design. If the players started clamoring for more PVM updates, I reckon we'd see the game go in that direction. And in many ways, I think that would also spur an evolution in terms of things that you've pulled on in terms of various threads in some of the recent live streams. One of the things that I go back to is how you mentioned that for people who are endgame PVMers, the drops that come from those bosses are frustratingly rare. But for somebody who just does, you know, a 5 or 6 skill Reaper task of a boss, they're stupidly rare to that point. Hmm. And with that, it really raises the question, you know, is that something that's sustainable for endgame? So I know we got that experiment coming in the new year to see how drops go on that, but that's something I'm definitely going to be keeping my eye on, if that could make RuneScape a different PVM-ish endgame.
That's a big design topic for me next year, and it's a risky one because especially if we're thinking about in terms of end game and people enjoying the end game, I'm willing to rock the boat, but I'm scared of rocking the boat, if that makes sense, because right now we have a system which is just about working, and I don't want to mess it up for the people that are currently enjoying
it. Right, because it's a huge end game for people who, and this is how RuneScape PVM works for people who haven't played it. Is that once you have, in effect, come up with your method and learnt how to kill a certain boss, you can effectively rinse and repeat for as many times as you'd like. And anybody who's taught themselves any of the Elder God Wars bosses are acutely aware of that. So I see what you mean by you don't want to necessarily upset something like that, because if you do, then, well, you're risking ruining the economy because of how things are farmed versus, you know, and a different game where these things might just come out in little pieces, XYZ kind of thing. So
also just, I mean, I'm thinking in terms of someone's play experience, like if someone's enjoying coming home and playing RuneScape, I don't want to mess that up for them, you know?
Yeah.
that's quite important. I'm worried about the sustainability in that regard. The obvious question is like, well, what does the next boss drop? Like, we are going to want to ship another boss at some point. what's that boss going to drop?
And how is it going to drop it, right? And you'd we've seen exactly. with the grinding of various enrages with Zamorak, for example. And the reason we're talking a bit about the drops in this case is because this all comes back to the question of an endgame, either, you know, constructed or reacted or reactive. Definitely constructive in the sense that the drop mechanics of Zamorak were different, but reactive in the sense that that's exactly where the players honed in on deciding what they were going to do. So that, I guess in some ways that factors into what the ideal RuneScape endgame would be on that path. But
yeah, I think the drop we haven't talked that much about PVM, have we? But in terms of like PVM is, I mean, if you set aside the drop log, which is kind of its own thing, PVM is sort of on, it's indefinitely repeatable. We've talked a lot about skills, right? And skills are largely, they are actually completable. I think most people are never going to get to 200 million all, but in that sense, they do have a finite endpoint. PVM doesn't really have a finite endpoint.
And with that, you know, PVM isn't a skill in that it's not something that you can just easily look up a guide on and see how to do it. You can look up the guide. It'll tell you what to wear. But once you set foot in that boss arena, you got a whole different suite of inputs to consider. And it's something that in many ways you have to teach yourself unless you have a good teacher behind you.
Yeah, and you're going to have to practice, right? I guess, like the PVM endgame, functionally speaking, is like a high skill ceiling gold grind, effectively. The goal appears to be gold, because essentially everything is fungible, and you're basically practicing. Like, I mean, there's an investment of, because again, you like PVM seems like it's easier. I think with skilling, I wouldn't be able to draw that hard line of where the end game starts, because I think it's very much depends on how you see the game. With PVM, it seems like there's a much clearer line between I am preparing to get to the point where I am farming the boss and I am at the point where I am farming the boss. And everything after the point where you start farming is end game, effectively. But prepping, like if I'm starting a new account now with the goal of farming Zamorak for money, there's a fairly clear line where I'm building towards the point of being able to do that and then now past that point. All of the practice and the skill ceiling and stuff, I guess you probably would get better and better at it over time, but there's a point where every point at which your kills are money positive, right, is you're reliably generating money rather than losing money is now the end game. And so in that regard, that the end game viewed from that perspective is effectively gold acquisition.
How do you feel about that, just money gold acquisition as an
I'm worried about the balance, honestly.
Right.
But I'm also, I want to make sure there's something to spend it on. That's my biggest concern.
Because
at the moment, the way
because the people who are most effective at that end game already have things like your fractured staff and Crypt Bloom and the, you know, 5 melee switches and whatnot and so on and so forth.
What are you spending your gold on, right? Like, it used to be, the structure used to be that you earned money to pay to level skills.
Yeah.
But that isn't really, like, prayer and construction aren't particularly expensive to level anymore. And herb lore is not particularly expensive to level anymore. And in any case, if you're super into gold grinds, then those gold grinds are ancient now. You know, they're not a thing that you need to worry about anymore. And I think we've ended up now where PVM is both the source of money and the sink for money. And that doesn't quite work. So that's the missing. I think grinding gold is a great end game. I think it works really well because it's indefinite. But what we need are things for people to be spending their gold on. That's the missing part of the equation for me at the moment.
Unless RuneScape, you know, shifts to becoming a purely focused PVM game, which I know there's people who would definitely not want that to happen, and there were people who probably would want that to happen to its highest degree.
I would agree that we don't want that to be the case. We want there to be other playstyles. But even if it was PVM only, you would still, the gold still needs to go somewhere. Like there needs to be some reason to spend it on something.
Yeah. Or there needs to be another thing that the PVM endgame gives you in that regard that allows you to, in effect, direct your account on that. And with this, I think what we've shown in terms of the entire grand vision here is that the typical, and this is what we were kind of thinking coming into this, the typical RuneScape endgames are the 99s, the skill chases, the cape chases, and PVM. But at the same time, when you consider the fact, and this is an answer I don't know that we considered, but the answer that you brought to us on this episode is that with RuneScape being such a different game in itself, you can have endgame content at level 60. You can have endgame content at level 99, at 120, or even at level 1 if you decided to, in effect, just push yourself into that endgame goal of making yourself trim masterwork. Which, I don't think any other game does that. And I think I think that's why we all love RuneScape so much.
I think as I say, it's much more clearly defined with PVM in terms of like prep for repeatable part, and then repeatable part is so clearly defined in PVM and so unclearly defined in skilling. Because you could argue that the skilling end game kind of starts. I don't think you would be an end game right from level one, but the loop, I guess, is similar in terms of like it's the same thing but more of it. So in that regard, one of the distinctive features about the WoW clone model of endgame is that the leveling content and the endgame content are nothing like each other. They don't bear any resemblance. And you could say the same thing is true of PVM in RuneScape. Like if you're prepping for PVM, I mean, that is going to involve a lot of farming bosses, presumably to build up your gold. You're farming lower level bosses, but you're also completing a lot of quests and grinding out a lot of skills. And completing quests and grinding skills are nothing like the PVM endgame. I don't think that's necessarily a flaw. But in the WoW clone model, there's a very sharp distinction between I level by doing quests and then I just grind bosses at the end game. And they have no resemblance. They've nothing to do with each other. They're not sort of unified parts of the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
With skilling, although making trim masterwork is not really much like making bronze armor, they are the kind of the same activity. You do interact with the same locations. You do interact with the same skills, and they're not a million miles apart in that regard. So it's kind of like baby's practice end game, I suppose, at level one. it isn't really the end game, but it is the same type of gameplay, just on a much shorter shorter loop.
Okay. I think that answers many of the questions that I wanted to pull on here and all the various threads and whatnot. And I think the biggest thing to me that's the sticking point, and Sharon, you can let me know if you have any other sticking points along this, is that this isn't necessarily very clearly brought forward to the players. And it's also, it feels like there's just, in some cases, a lack of direction in the game with this perspective that you can have this end game content in a quest or a skill update. And if there was going to be one criticism of the endgame structure that we pulled out from this episode, that would be that.
But directing players towards it, in a sense.
Yeah, directing players towards it and saying, hey, this is how we do this in RuneScape. This is...
I guess so. It's interesting because I think, like... Sorry, I would make that criticism of RuneScape, but perhaps not in this context of like one of the assumptions that we make about signposting, and sometimes erroneously, I think we probably could do better. But largely, we assume that the deeper you are into the game, the more invested you are in finding things out.
Okay.
RuneScape is such a research heavy. Like if you come to RuneScape with the mentality, I'm never going to read a guide, I'm never going to read the wiki, I'm never going to ask anyone for advice, you are not going to get very far into RuneScape before you give up, right? You'll get about three quests in, and then you'll be like, oh my God, what am I supposed to do next?
Right.
Like RuneScape is not very good at self-guiding, and that's partly a structure. It's partly partly derived from it being so open. If the game was more linear and clearer, we could restructure the game to make it much more linear and much more guided and much more mandatory. And I don't think anyone would want that. I think that isn't RuneScape. To an extent, and we could leave the content exactly as is. So their versions of the path system, some of which went live and some of which never went live, were much more linear, sort of demanded that you play the game in a particular way and gave you only concrete choices. Like, there was like a non-dismissible pop-up which was like, you are going to complete this quest next, so get these levels. And that was just, the game was just telling you that was what you had to do. And that isn't quite the game that RuneScape is. And so I think in that, when we have kind of defined it and throughout the discussion, right? When I think about skilling in that regard, there's an organicness to it, which I quite like. Like, you try out, you know, you're in Berthop, you try out some skills, he recommends you make a hat. Okay, well, I've made a hat. Oh, mining and smithing. Maybe you hate it, in which case you just ignore it and go off and farm trolls or whatever. But maybe you're like, oh, I quite like this. I quite like the groundedness of this. I'm going to make myself a sword. And then you just keep doing mining and smithing. Yeah. You keep doing mining and smithing. And eventually you're like, what's the best armor I can make with this skill? Oh, I can, like, and this is really, like, you're effectively just continuing to just do the same thing over and over again, but each time it gets longer. And eventually there is a kind of apotheosis of that process, and then now you're in the end game, you know, and you've sort of organically and continually got there rather than...
And you might want to augment that along the way with other things that you can add on. You might look up and say, oh, I can make this spear, but the spear tip comes from archaeology. That's stupidly rare. I don't have money. I'm just going to, you know, go do an hour a day of archaeology, get up to that spot, and maybe one day I'll get that. Yeah. And I could see that as being something that people might want to do. Or the other side of that coin is, you know, oh, I'm going to go, you know, farm some herbs and make some money along the way and raise money for that spear tip.
What we wouldn't want to do, and again, like, by compared to other MMOs, which we explicitly would do this, is we wouldn't want to say, ah, you've got to the early end game. Time to start PVMing. What's that? You know, the meme, right? Estia meme. Ah, you're close to maxing. Well, these skills aren't worth continuing to level. So I guess you better start PVMing. Get yourself to Archglacier and off you go. I hope you like action by combat. Like, we wouldn't want to do that because that is our end game is not locked to and restricted to only PVM.
Yeah.
And so I think we would try to redress that balance before we sort of tutorialized, no, I'm sorry, you have to go do PVM now.
Yeah. And you know, I also think we're in an interesting spot in the entire gaming landscape where a gaming session doesn't look like a gaming session that it used to 5 years ago, let alone 10 or 20 years ago when RuneScape came out, in that you want to be able to make that progress in a granular way, even if you only, you know, have 5 minutes or so to log in every couple hours to check something on RS Mobile, right?
Yep.
You know, absolutely. Case in point for that for me is the player owned farm.
Yeah,
I was consistently checking that when Fresh Start came out.
I'm guessing that also comes from like a change in demographic, right? Like, my guess, at least, maybe I'm completely wrong, but my guess is that players have gotten much older on average. Yep.
That's how it feels. Yep. That's how it
feels. On average, approximately 1 year per year.
that
makes sense when you think about it.
Makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Oh boy. All right.
That's gonna be like in the nursing homes in like 60 years.
Oh god, I don't want to think about that. Then who's gonna be making the updates? It's still going to be you and Mod Timbo and everybody else we'll there.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I think that defines what RuneScape's endgame is. The ideal endgame, and provides a bit more of a flesh.
The ideal endgame being a nursing home, or
no, yep, just what we've come up with over the last hour and a bit here. Do either of you guys have anything else before we move on and wrap this show up?
No, like, what I wanted to say is just in general, like, usually I have a pretty good intuition about like game designy stuff, and I had a lot of like threads about Endgame and how you were thinking about it, but you know, this episode sort of managed to tie it all together. I'm like, oh yeah, like, if you put it like that, you can explain it in two or three sentences, all the 20 different things I figured out. Yeah, no, good stuff. I think that was really insightful, at least for me.
And that was the reason I wanted to bring you both together for this one and actually do this podcast, because there were a few of your live streams back where I was watching you, and I thought, oh, he's straying awfully close to the topic of RuneScape Endgame. Is he going to go there? No, he didn't. Let's see if we can do that for the year end or early January special, and lo and behold, here we are. So I'm glad that we got to do this. And before we go, just as, you know, RSBNB update tradition, Mod Jack, do you have a pick of the week that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I I got myself a, wait, what are they called now? An Oculus, no, Meta Quest. Oh God, they renamed it all. It's so confusing. Half their websites still say Oculus. All the URLs will say Oculus still, but then they say Meta in the headline. So they haven't quite finished updating. Anyway, I got myself a Meta Quest, and I've been playing Pistol Whip. I got it to play Beat Saber, and I used to play Beat Saber a lot on my computer, and I'm sick of the cable. So I got a Quest so I can do it without a cable. And that Beat Saber works really well. But there's a game on it that was recommended called Pistol Whip, which is like a VR shooter game, but it plays music very loudly at you, and if you shoot in time, you get more points. And it's exhausting and weirdly good exercise. You wouldn't think a shooter would be good exercise. But you're constantly they constantly shoot bullets at you, and you have to squat in order to dodge the bullets.
Oh my goodness!
Some of them you just have to kind of bounce up and down at an incredibly fast rate. So yeah, it's a great experience. I'd recommend it if you can if you know someone who's got one, ask them to get Pistol Whip and play it.
All right, so that's the pick of the week: MetaQuest and Pistol Whip. And I'd imagine if the RuneScape community heard that, they'd be asking you to show that off on live stream at some point.
God, I guess I could, since I am streaming from the kitchen anyway.
There you go. Anyways, folks, thank you, Mod Jack, so much for being here and sitting down and discussing RuneScape Endgame with us. It's clarified a lot of things and just, you know, put the typical RuneScape spin on something that in so many other MMOs is so simple. And as a result, we now have a more clear definition of what that is. So thank you for spending the last hour or so with us. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.
And of course, RSBNB Update is delivered each and every week. And the best way to automatically get the podcast is to subscribe. We're on a whole suite of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Cast, Amazon, and Stitcher, amongst many others. We also publish the video version of the show to YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. And with that, we post the nibbles, the shorter clip versions of the show. And if you like the podcast, definitely like and subscribe. It greatly helps the channel out. And with that, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.